Just before I was coming down, I checked my email one last time because there's always something coming in. And indeed, I'd missed the message about Sarah's back not being well this morning. And I also saw what was the fourth email I've received notifying about what's happening at Dar al-Taqwa later today. If you don't know, there is going to be an event of solidarity, an interfaith event by which the community is invited to come and be in a space of centering and community in prayer as we remember those 50 now, as the count has come in, that were shot and killed in Christchurch, New Zealand, as they went to their Friday prayers. It was meaningful to me that after getting the three other emails from different community outlets, that it was an email from Shella Khan in particular, who is a female leader within the community and continually makes herself present in different community spaces. I see Anne nodding because she knows Shella well. She's been at the Interfaith Gathering, and she was over at the Courageous Conversations kickoff over at St. John's Baptist Church this past week. For those who aren't aware, there will be conversations beginning this week in the 4 weeks coming, somewhat like the ones you may have heard of last year, but this year they're going to be sequential each week instead of each month, and they are designed to have people come together to have some of the hard conversations, particularly as it's connected to race and our spirituality and how it is that we continually interface in community and continue to build bridges together. And so getting that email from her, I know she must have had to reach out. I know that she wants everybody to know and all who could get there. But to receive that personal email that said, "Dear Claire, I just wanted to see if you plan to be there tonight." And it's been a busy week, but I know that's where God is calling me to be. And I know that some of you are also feeling called. I know it's going to be a packed place and a packed parking lot. So please feel some rest on your heart if you are not able to go, that there will be community representation from this community. And we hope to report back. But to receive that email and say, "Dear Claire," there's a personal piece to that. One in which we know that each and every person who has died had somebody who would always be in their lives that was saying, "Dear you, I see you." We serve a God who also has the distinction of being a part of this larger sweep of creation. We talked about it last week when we were talking about Sabbath. And about the sixth day that came, everything had been created, and then we were invited, we humanity, each and every one of us were invited also to rest. Because if we are in the Imago Dei, the image of God, that that's expected of us too. That we are to work and to work and to toil and to labor, even as it's on the heels of Eden. That we need that space to come together. And that's what those who were seeking to pray at Friday, praying as they do many times a day, were hoping to seek and find that quiet center and the worshiping community by which they could turn it over to God. And that was in violation. It was in violation of this deep and innate part of us that needs a space to go, that we can feel safe and we can trust. Some of what's happening for the bent over woman today is that she believes, as those that gather in the synagogue do, that God is going to show up there at that house of worship. Did you notice that in the story she wasn't asking for healing? Sometimes in the healing stories it is somebody being very persistent and coming forth, or even somebody's friends lowering them into a house. Here she's just showing up to worship. It's part of her faithly duty, it's her responsibility. Even as she is unclean, she knows that this is the place where she's not even asking for bodily healing. She has been dealing with this for 18 years. She's not asking for that. She's coming because she's hoping that she might hear a word, I imagine, that connects her to that Sabbath and a space of that liberation. And from hearing that liberation, she might be able to face the next 6 days of the week, as backbreaking and spirit-crushing as they might be. She needs a word. She wasn't expecting liberation. That wasn't her expectation. And yet, if we look at Sabbath, we know it's connected to that creation. And the other piece of it is deliverance. We saw last week from Leviticus that there was a lot of practices and desire for the institution to work out the days of the week as you set them aside. Don't take too much manna. and the years that would be set aside once they were a landed people. On the seventh year, you do what? Debts are forgiven, slaves can go free, and what? The land lies fallow. In that seventh year, that in the foraging, those who are hungry, those who thirst, those who may be characterized as the least, well, everybody is the least as we come together and allow the earth to bring forth what it will to feed us. We are the same. It is under that equitable imagination that deliverance comes. The people who were in slavery in Egypt, and now, Sabbath is a reminder of that freedom, the release of the history that would bind, of the current things that keep you down, and also a vision into what we had called Jubilee, that 7x7 sense that God is continually making a way to something greater and more beautiful, and that we, out of our brokenness, might be liberated into it. That is the joy that is awaking the bent over woman. Because Jesus is taking the moment to say, I see you. I see you in a way that you can't even lean up to look me in the eye, but I see you. And I see that you've been coming here and that you trust that this place can be a place of safety and a place, a house of worship. But we know in some ways that it has failed her and so many that would have gathered there, characterizing them as the least. And so he takes what we know to be an institutionalized part of the structure, as the codes would come together, especially among the Pharisees, saying how rigid it had to be interpreted so that you did not do certain levels of work. But isn't it sometimes when you're not trying to do work, just trying to get the structures about not doing work actually becomes work? Does that ever happen? I will set aside this time. I will carve it out in my calendar. I will refrain from saying yes to the six people who asked me to do something in this time, and it will be mine. And when you come to it, you don't even know how to breathe out, because it's so hard. And I imagine that's how some of the people were feeling. They knew that they were to show up in the structure called the synagogue. They were to open their ears and hope for liberation, knowing they were part of creation and always being looked at like they're doing something wrong. They're either unclean or they didn't get the letter of the law just right. And Jesus, as we know, has often said that he's come to fulfill the scriptures. And he says, take that letter of the law and meet my civil disobedience. Because I see her. I see her. I see her as she's come not to be healed, but there's a healing to be done. I see her because she needs freedom, and you all need freedom from the structure that is suffocating you. It's taking the very life out of Sabbath. It's taking out the reality that you are creation and you are beloved, and it's taking it and saying, some are beloved. It's taking out that piece of deliverance and saying, you who create structures will continue to impose structures on others by which you may gain and by which they may be oppressed. And so the liberation is there. It opens up in a way of compassion, right? We talked about this word, and as our group gathered, we were particularly concerned with the compassion that might turn inwardly. That which has to be done before you can actually turn it outwardly, compassion coming from the word to suffer with, right? This is something that Jesus is distinctly able to do time and time again. He suffers with you whether you want him to or not. He sidles up to you as you're bent over and he says, I'm here. I'm here, and not only that, but I'm going to help you come out of that place of suffering. I know that you came to the synagogue with the hope that you were at least around other people and you could have Sabbath, but what if all of us, by the witness of your example of the healing I can do through you, what if all of us can be a testament to that larger stroke of creation and the larger stroke of healing that would then by liberate the synagogue and liberate all my people who are yet suffering? Just suffer with. It might sound strange, but the question is then how we suffer with ourselves. Sometimes it can be a distraction to go along and try to sidle up to someone else and you haven't dealt with your own stuff. And then what happens? You start projecting a bit of what it is, and maybe some of your stuff oozes out. And my goodness, I didn't mean it to, but it found the other person and now they have more pain. Now we're both in pain together. Not that that's a bad thing, to sit in solidarity as you are both broken. But there are the invitations at Sabbath. There are the invitations through that tough word, discipline, right? This is one that we, through the Elizabeth O'Connor book, had continued to come back to her definition of discipline, which didn't sound nearly so Pharisaic. It just sounds like this. Discipline. A response to the waiting grace of God. Right? Yeah. Discipline. A response to the waiting grace of God. That means the hovering spirit that was available and creating at creation, it's already waiting on you. It's waiting for you. It's waiting with you. A response to the waiting grace of God. And sometimes the only way we can get to the nugget of that grace and all it has to overflow in the mountain of its wisdom is to pause. And to do that Sabbath discipline of pausing and finding a way in that being. And sometimes we look to our brothers and sisters in other traditions. Certainly, I know that I have long admired my Muslim friends, brothers and sisters, who through their discipline are constantly finding their prayer rugs and getting in touch with the divine. I was listening to a podcast through a group called The Liturgist, and Hilary McBride was talking about the gifts that Buddhism has brought, and specifically a form of prayer that relates particularly to self-compassion. And she talked about it in such a way that's connected to a brain study. And I love this. That in 2012, there was a study that when you meditated for 20 minutes a day for 8 weeks, talk about a habit, it decreases the gray matter in the amygdala. Right? 20 minutes a day for 8 weeks decreases the gray matter in your amygdala. It increases your top-down functioning and your ability to act more in a place of responsiveness versus reactivity, right? To tamp down on some of that fear-based response that we might otherwise have, and to actually change the structure of the brain even when you're not meditating. I loved that part. You could actually not be thinking that you're in the act of that meditating at that moment, but just because you're setting aside 20 minutes a day for 8 weeks and beyond, your brain is starting to act and behave in different ways, and the gray matter is decreasing. Don't we need a world in which the gray matter is decreasing? Right? I'm not saying we don't live in the gray places. Things aren't black and white. Gray can be lovely and beautiful, but when we're talking about storm clouds and all the negativity and all the things that can cling to us, wouldn't it be nice if gray matter, as it clouds even one's brain, would be on the down swing? There was an increased activation in this particular compassion-based meditation. And we find, as Hilary found as she related it, that she became not only more in tune with her own self-places, but as a result, was able to have a better response to other people's suffering, right? We tend to not think that's true, I think. We tend to think the more we focus on self, and if we give energy to ourselves, that we are naturally taking it away from someone else. I'm the mother of a 2- and 5-year-old. I think this. Because I'm told it. I can go off and try to squirrel away at 5:30 a.m., and then somebody's belly needs oatmeal, and the time fades, right? But increased activation of people's suffering as someone who cares about the pain of others. This is distinctly a part of the Christian tradition. Why? Because we see it here with Jesus today. We see it in the story, not only of the piece of Matthew, but also in this piece of Luke, to suffer with and alongside. But paying attention to our own breaths and to spend time with yourself intentionally, waiting upon the grace of God. No. A response to what is already the waiting grace of God. And our church isn't always good about setting us up for this in Sabbath. So yes, we turn to other traditions like this compassion prayer because we need opening not only to relate to ourselves, but because when we are called upon to relate to others in the ripple effects of our interfaith world. I'm going to go through a little bit of what is called this compassion prayer, the meta prayer. Some of you may have practiced it. I had the opportunity to do so one time. But I'm wondering about some pieces for this Lenten time to come, because this full week that has been is inviting more self-compassion. Here are the steps and pieces of this. May I be free from inner and outer harm and danger. May I be safe and protected. May I be free of mental suffering or distress. May I be happy. May I be free of physical pain and suffering. May I be healthy and strong. May I be able to live in this world happily, peacefully, joyfully, with ease. I have to ask myself if that's what I truly want for myself. I get the impression that's what God wants for me. May I be free from inner and outer harm and danger. May I be safe and protected. May I be free of mental suffering or distress. May I be happy. May I be free of physical pain and suffering. May I be healthy and strong. May I be able to live in this world happily, peacefully, joyfully, with ease. And it is only after sitting in that calming space I can already feel my breath calm and I'm not talking so fast with you. I can feel the way it changes my energy. It makes me feel the God who is suffering with and drawing me out from. Because after that place of actually sitting in that self-compassionate way, you go through that same litany, this time inviting kindness and feelings for that person in your life or the person's different points, pure and unconditional kindness. Someone who calls from you pure and unconditional kindness. This is agape person in your life. That mentor or tutor or teacher or spouse or grandchild for whom you can think about them and this so easily comes. I want this to be a part of your reality. May you be free. Insert name. May you have freedom from mental suffering and distress. May you be able to live in this world happily, peacefully, joyfully, with ease. The third piece is to move on to a dear friend. Again, natural fit. Someone you may know is going through a time of suffering, and insert that rhythm and go through it and allow it to be felt in your body because you've already built up the reservoir of self-compassion. So compassion starts to weave its way as you share each and every one of those pieces of reflection. Then you move on another time to a neutral person. I really love this. This is the mail carrier. This is someone that you don't have strong feelings either way, a dislike or a like, but they're in your world. Helps you be in touch with the fact that there are a lot of people out there in your world for whom you do not have a personal, dedicated responsibility and relationship. I like this because it invites you to actually seek out making relationship with some of these people. You're like, oh, I don't even know their name. Dear convenience mart clerk. Right? And you go through the litany because there are countless people out in this world doing and functioning and being out there doing and helping to assist in your life to be who you are. And then comes perhaps one of the harder parts. You keep up this litany and you find somebody you got difficulty with. And again, you've already done the pre-work. You've been doing some of the receiving from God, and now is the time of invitation when we were talking about debts being forgiven. You may or may not have a conversation with this person. They might not even know. Maybe it's some political leader or somebody out there causing consternation in a way that they will never know. But when you find a way of intentionally believing that they are part of the created order too, that they need Sabbath as well, and maybe if they had a little more Sabbath, they'd be a little more civil. We're calling upon the Spirit's intercession because God is about the restoration of all. And even if you're not at that point yet where there's a particular person that you can insert into that, I'm guessing that if you do this for 8 weeks, you might get to a point where you can. That compassion is necessary for all. In the practice, the version I found of this also says that you end in such a way that you're able to stretch out your compassionate arms around everything. You've tended to that center self. You've reached it out to those places of your natural love. You've gone into the neutrality and into the hostility that isn't the natural place to bundle it all of this universe. May all beings be safe, happy, healthy, live joyously. May all living beings be safe, happy, healthy, live joyously. May all breathing beings be safe, happy, healthy, live joyously. May all individuals be safe, happy, healthy, live joyously. May all beings in existence be safe, happy, healthy, live joyously. I loved this quote, and it's where I'll begin to put a punctuation. From Ronald P. Byers, "In the reign of God, there will be no conflicts between what is good for one and what is good for all." In the reign of God, there will be no conflicts between what is good for one and what is good for all. What if, friends, the place we come to on the Sabbath, our church and our churches and our worshiping communities, are places where self-compassion is cultivated, where meditation puts us in touch with our own places of suffering, and we are made to be more in tune with the suffering of the world, that we might actually do a better job of living as the created order and being about the liberation of all things. Because in the reign of God, there will be no conflicts between what is good for one, what is good for me, and what is good for all creation. As we come to the table of communion today, we know that it is a personal act by which we're asking that you put out your hand and receive it from somebody, recognizing that this is part of a response to the waiting grace of God. We know that it was an individual way in which Jesus saw each and every one of those hurting people around a table one night as he was preparing for his own deep suffering. And he asked that they suffer with them into the birth of new covenant. And so as you receive, know that you're receiving in that place, may it be one of compassion, where you need to be nurtured, where you need that first part of the mantra that just says, "Here I am," as a response. May you take it, may it be nourishing. May you and the least of you of who you are receive that which you might be thirsty or hungry. Knowing that also this is a table by which many people were sitting it around it. And that we do communion not in isolated corners, but because we are together, it becomes the union with God. And today we're offering a special time of receiving as well for those who need a particular mark of God's healing presence. Not because we are vessels or the ones in which we're endowing some priestly authority, but because we believe in this Jesus who saw. And even though it wasn't asked of him, went the twofold way of telling her she was healed and also touching her. So we have anointing oil. Anna and I will be at stations as you receive, before you receive or after you receive, if you feel called to come and receive that anointing oil, perhaps a part of that Lenten promise to be compassionate with oneself and to live into whatever discipline you're taking on or will take on that says, "I will respond, not be reactive to," that's that gray matter stuff, "but I will respond to the waiting grace of God." As I go tonight, friends, to the mosque, I will carry you with me. As we continue to suffer together, we say we see you. We feel pain too. We can't fully understand, but we can keep working for a place in a way in which what is good for me, what is good for you, can be good and life-giving for all. Thanks be to God.